Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 176 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again today on the show. We've got a ton of stuff to go through. Among these items, the CCFR turns 9 years old. That's kind of a nice milestone coming up on the big one next year, I guess, right? We also now have a hearing date for our appeal in the Federal Court of Appeal concerning our landmark lawsuit against the government. We'll talk about that with Ms. Wilson. Police across the country let Justin Trudeau know exactly what he's done to make Canada a more dangerous place, not a less dangerous place. So a big rejection of liberal gaslighting there. That's very interesting. And we will also have a really great interview that I did a couple of weeks ago with Jen Shears, who's a business owner and prominent seal hunter from Newfoundland, and she's coming on to talk to us about the seal hunt and whatnot. It's quite an interesting story, so I'm really excited to share that one with you. All that and more, CCFR Radio starts right now. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. With a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter, they have what you need. Plus, free shipping over $250, which includes ammo, or flat rate shipping of $17 under $250. Some conditions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. All right, we are back. So here's how the show is going to go today. I've only got a couple of things I'm going to share with you before we move on to the interview with Jen Shears, which I'm really excited to share with you because I just found it fascinating. You know, the seal hunt is still going on and it's still a highly valuable aspect of you know, Canadian maritime culture. And it's just, I didn't know anything about any of that stuff. And Jen is such a great ambassador. I'm just really excited to share this interview with you. So as soon as I share a couple of things with you here, we'll cut over to the interview that I did a couple of weeks ago with Jen. And then we'll go straight to Tracy, because Tracy and I got a bunch of stuff to cover. It's actually been a very busy 2 weeks in Canada as it applies to guns and stuff. So anyway, that's how it'll work. So the couple of things I had to share with you before we move on to Jen are, number one, Willie the Kid contest. So in the last episode, we talked about the Willie the Kid contest. It's a contest for a piece of Canadian military history. And it's kind of a very unique prize. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, go to ccfr.ca, check out the contest page, and I'll be disclosing the winner in the following podcast and TV show. So make sure you check that out, Willie the Kid contest. Also, I would like to ask you that if you are a French speaker and you're interested in a French podcast, what we have is the unofficial CCFR radio podcast, which is Au pas de tir. Help me out here. Au pas de tir. The French field officers are laughing at me right now. But anyway, that was my best attempt. But this is a podcast that's hosted by three of the CCFR's field officers, basically the leads of the Quebec team. And I want to give them a shout out and try to push some support their way. So if you're interested, you speak French and you're interested in a French podcast about guns and what's going on as it applies to your ability to legally own and use guns in Quebec or in Canada in general, in French, check that out. So you need only go to YouTube, type in the title here of the podcast, and the search engine will find it for you, and you can check that out. I think they got some giveaways and stuff for people that are listening and all kinds of cool stuff happening over there. So check that out. And I also want to mention A lot of people that used to follow me in my old YouTube channel way back in the day, like not everyone is familiar with where I came from, but I used to own a training business, among other things, in Canada back in the days before the CCFR. And that's sort of that YouTube channel, which was, I think, the most popular firearm-related YouTube channel in Canada at the time. You know, the numbers on that channel don't compare with the numbers that we see today in Canadian YouTube channels. And certainly the quality didn't. Back then it was all green screen. It was, I look at it now, I find it actually quite cringy, to be honest with you. But back in the day, that was, you know, it was a popular channel. And that's sort of how the CCFR found me. And that's how I was recruited to be the first president of the CCFR way back in 2015. Well, I hadn't uploaded, you know, the CCFR took over my life on many different fronts. And I hadn't uploaded a firearm review or any videos, really, not any original videos, for 6 years. And so as fate would have it, I kind of got this gun, and I was like, oh, and people are like, you know, do a review for old time's sake. And the people are hassling me about that. And I'm like, you know what? I have the resources to do it, and it'll actually look nice, unlike all the stuff that I did back then. So I did do a new firearm review. It's of the Daria TM22 on the Civil Advantage channel. So if you know where that is, if you're subscribed, great. If not, just type in Civil Advantage into the YouTube search engine as well, and you'll find the channel, and you'll find that new review for the TM22. And I also uploaded a little video to make it easier to load TM22 mags, because they're a little tough on your fingers. As well, I did another video called Behind the Review, because I just thought there was some interesting information to share with everybody. So anyway, if you want to check out those videos, you can. If you're an old Civil Advantage subscriber, it'll feel like the old days, and that's pretty much why I did it. So a little bit of nostalgia. Anyway, you can check that out if you are interested. All right, that's all I had to cover. I tried to make that as quick as possible because we got lots of great content coming up. So let's cut over to Jen Shears and check it out.
You may be aware that the CCFR is Canada's gun lobby, but did you know the CCFR has a free mobile app that can save you hundreds in hunting and shooting merchandise? Keep up with what's going on in the community, watch our podcast, and get exclusive discounts from dozens of gun stores and other CCFR business members. You can do it all through this free app, available for Apple and Android users. The CCFR mobile app, download it for free right now.
All right, via Skype, I'm really happy to announce we have a special guest, and it's Jen Shears. How's it going, Jen?
Great, thanks. You, Rod?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for asking. Good. Now, I've been really excited to have you on the show because I think the things that you do, not a lot of people do and not a lot of people understand. So I'm really excited to get into it. But I just thought I'd mention quickly how we met. We met at the Conservative Party of Canada Outdoor Symposium in Ottawa just a few months back. And I sat and listened to your speech, and I just found it really compelling and really informative. So I'm just letting you know, I'm really glad that you're here. And I think we're gonna come up with some really interesting stuff for the viewers.
Thanks.
All right. So the first order of business is to just give a brief introduction of yourself, kind of how long you've been sealing, I guess they call it that. I'm trying to get my head around that as well. But how long you've been doing this and your business and how you got into it, that kind of thing.
Sure. So I've been a commercial sealer actually for 3 years now. It's a bit of a process to get a commercial sealing license. You need to apprentice under someone for a couple of years. My husband has been sealing off and on for 20 to 25 years. And we got into the seal products business even before that. We are taxidermists by trade. My husband is a registered taxidermist. And when we started a wildlife museum and we had a gift shop there, we wanted renewable resource-based products. And seal skins were incredibly beautiful, and I thought we could do some really great things with them. So that's how we got into selling seal products.
Awesome. Well, I will tell you this. My wife was on your website just last night because I was talking about how we're going to do this interview today. And I don't know. I think she's already going to be spending money. So
that's sounds great.
Yeah. Somehow I'm going to have to recoup that from you guys somehow. All right. So can you talk a little bit about sealing in general? Because I don't think it's something that people really know about too much. It's not a common type of hunting, certainly in central and Western Canada.
Sure. Yeah. Out west, I know they could use more sealing. But off the coast of Newfoundland, the main seal that we go after commercially and personally would be the harp seal. The population right now is at least 4 million off the coast of Newfoundland. Numbers go as high as 10 million in terms of the estimates. And the hunt mainly takes place in April when the ice floes are off the coast of Newfoundland. Basically, you go out in an open boat and you try to spot the seals on the ice floes, and you're able to target them that way. And then to retrieve them, you need to hop out onto the ice and retrieve them. So it's quite an endeavor, I must say, to get out at it. And it's commercially, the buyers will determine how many that they're purchasing, and that will determine every day how many you're allowed to go out and get, or at what point the hunt is stopped once that buyer quota has been filled at least.
Okay. And what kind of products do you have with seals? Like I understand the clothing and the mitts and the boots and coats and all the rest of that stuff, but do people eat seal commonly in Eastern Canada or anywhere in Canada for that matter?
Yeah, seal is a really great protein, very rich in omega-3 and in real good nutrients and minerals. There is also a big market now for seal oil. So it is a marine mammal, so you get a layer of blubber, and then that can be rendered down to make omega-3 oil for both humans and pets. There are companies out there that are marketing those capsules and that oil for pets. So it's really a full utilization type of resource. You've got the fur that makes biodegradable clothing, you've got the omega-3 oils, and then you do have the meat as well.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting to me how people have a preconceived notion about sealing, about hunting seals, I guess, because they're cute animals. And I've thought, to be honest with you, I've thought a lot about it myself. And, you know, I guess it's really an emotional response to something that should be an opinion based on fact. Like, you know, like it's okay to hunt moose and elk and deer and bear, but something cute, it's not okay to hunt that animal. So what, you know, have you had a lot of people voicing their opinion, or how did you reconcile with it, I guess, might be a good question.
For me, I always say that I support the seal hunt and other sustainable hunting, not despite being an environmentalist, but because I am an environmentalist. For me, as a human race, as a society, if we stray away from renewable resource-based products that yield biodegradable clothing and meats and things like that, I don't really know what else we have as a planet. So my background's in environmental biology. I grew up living off the land from a family of hunters and fishers. And so all that's important. Also, seals right now are so overpopulated. They're having major impacts on fish resources. They're coming into places where they've never been, looking for other food. They're going after non-traditional foods like shrimp and crab and lobster. Normally they would go after fatty, rich, meaty, omega, fishes that are in the water column, whereas now they're going for the crustaceans because that's kind of all they have left. So that has big implications for their health and for their long-term viability. And so for all those reasons, I'm a big supporter of it.
Yeah, that's, well, again, the truth is a lot different than, I guess, the fiction or the emotional response that people have. Now, speaking of which, okay, so we're out of time for this segment, but maybe could we do one more together?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And the reason for that is you've been the subject of protests and whatnot, and I want to get into that. So just hang on right there and we'll be right back. All right. We are back with Jen Shears. And now I think this is going to be the fun part. The first segment was sort of the introduction. This is the fun part. Now, not everyone around is as excited about sealing as you are. And in fact, as most people know, for decades and decades, people have been against seal hunting for a variety of different reasons. And I know that you've been subject to protests, and even your store. Can you share a couple of protest stories with us? Because they're kind of interesting.
Yeah, so back in 2017, I guess, was our first major protest. The day before, someone actually called us to give us a heads up that through a Facebook group, they had heard that there might be a protest at our store. So we were thinking, well, we need to try to turn this into something positive to promote our products. So I did a Facebook Live to say, we're hearing that tomorrow there's going to be a protest. We'd like for everyone to come support us. And sure enough, people did start coming to support. And then in the middle of it, the protesters did come out as well. So they were lined up in front of our store with their signs and everything. And I said, I can't take this. I just need to head out there and tell these people, you know, how it is and invite people to come down to support us again. So I went out and did a Facebook Live. They were yelling and screaming in the background, and I was just inviting people to come down and to support the renewable, sustainable seal hunt in Newfoundland and the products that come from it. A man was like tapping me with a sign. So I was in the chaos saying, please don't touch me, sir. And then they were yelling. And anyway, it ended up being like the busiest week we had probably ever had at our store, because if you piss off a Newfoundlander, they'll come out in droves to support you. You wouldn't think that in downtown St. John's, Newfoundland, you know, where the sealers have gone for generations, departed from the Narrows, that that would be a hotbed for protesting against the seal hunt. But it certainly was that particular day. And ever since, we've had a few episodes of protesters coming in. But I will say that taking the time to speak with one of the ladies that was there, she actually wrote me a few days later saying she had listened to my messages. She read the things that I had written, and she had been persuaded to our side. She realized she was wrong. And when she communicated that to the group she was protesting with, they shunned her. So it just goes to show that facts and the truth isn't what they're about. It's about their emotion and the money and the lives that help them attain their goals. So that was pretty cool. I will say that the main argument against the seal hunt is that people deem it to be inhumane, but that couldn't be furthest from the truth. It's actually probably the most humane harvest out there. It's incredibly regulated. Sealers have to take a course in order to be able to go out sealing. And in that course, you're taught the three steps on how to humanely dispatch of a seal. Now, I've hunted around the world, and I've never had to take a species-specific course on how to humanely dispatch of an animal, but for seals, you do. So the first step is the strike. So that's usually from a high-powered rifle, a 22-250, a 223. The second step is called check. So you actually walk up to the seal, and you have to palpate the skull. So that means you touch the seal on the head. If the entire cranium, the entire skull is kind of obliterated, you can proceed to the next step. If it's not obliterated, though, if there's still some intact, you are required by law to hit it on the head with a prescriptive tool called a hackapick or a club for all intents and purposes. So that image gets people thinking that, you know, it's barbaric, but through the regulations, the only way you can ensure that the seal is unconscious is to ensure the cranium is obliterated. So we're doing one thing to make sure it's humane, but it looks bad. So animal rights groups take it, and it's perfect fodder for them because it looks inhumane. So that's a bit of a conundrum there. And then the third step is bleed. So you sever the arteries underneath the flippers, and the seal has to bleed out for a minute or two. So again, looks really cruel, looks barbaric, but we do it to ensure that the seals are completely dead and unconscious before proceeding to harvest the fur, the meat, and the oil. So that's a big nuance, I think, that's out there that many of these animal rights groups aren't aware of. And again, it looks bad, but we really are doing it in the interest of being humane. And peer-reviewed studies have shown that it is at least as humane as other commercial harvests or animal-related industries. So we are on the right side of things here.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? The things that you do to make it better or more humane is what they want to use against you. And I will share with you that I've had the same experience where someone is in opposition to you. You calmly talk to them, tell them exactly, you know, what the facts are and what your position is and the reason that why you're advocating that. Like, you're not sealing because you're cruel. You're sealing for all of the reasons that you mentioned. I'm not advocating for legal access to firearms and a regulatory system to support it because I'm cruel. I want only good people to access firearms. So I've had that same experience where people turn around. They're like, you know what? I was wrong, which is really great.
But, it makes it worthwhile.
Well, yeah. And, you know, when we just got started, you know, I talked about the amount of time that we have in the television format. And you're like, well, we could be talking for an hour or two on this topic, and I agree with you. But unfortunately, we're out of time. But I think I'll have you back for sure if you're willing to come back on the show.
I'd be happy to. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we go, can you tell us where to find your work and your store and everything?
Sure. So our store is called Natural Boutique. The website's naturalboutique.ca. I'm personally on Instagram as Smidgen. So S-M-I-D-J-E-N. Also Facebook, Jen Shears Outdoors. I have a blog where I cover the seal hunt, polar bear hunting and things like that. JenShears.com. And the boutique is also on Facebook, Natural Boutique NL on Facebook. So the sealskin products are there.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for coming on, Jen. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rod. My pleasure.
All right. Well, there you have it. I hope that you all enjoyed watching and listening to that interview as much as I enjoyed having that conversation with Jen. And as I mentioned in the beginning of that conversation, I met Jen at the outdoor symposium held by the conservatives in Ottawa. And when I first got into a conversation with her and when I listened to her speech about sealing, I'm like, sealing, seal hunting? Like, you know, I thought that was something that happened in the 40s and that was done away with. It's just interesting. Like, I love learning new things. So it was just fascinating to me. And it was also fascinating to me how important controlling the seal population is to the local ecology, right? Like, that's something that's counterintuitive too. And I'm probably the last bit of insight that I want to, you know, share with you is, man, there is a group of protesters for basically everything. If you're doing anything at all other than, you know, standing in line waiting for food stamps and then paying the government your money, there's going to be protests, right? So that's always interesting to me. And as usual, you end up having protesters that aren't really sure what they're protesting about, right? So, and, you know, God forbid they take 2 minutes and talk to the people that they're protesting. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I shouldn't be here. But anyway, I thought it was a fascinating chat. And again, a big thank you goes out to Jen Shears. She's a really great representative of her sport and her way of life. Really appreciate her coming on. All right, let's bring Tracy on. All right, we are back in via Skype. We've got Tracy Wilson of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights, I think. Wilson!
You get crazier every time.
Yeah, well, I'm doing an office renovation and a bunch of soundproofing, so just wait till that's done.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's going to get rough.
Yeah, it will. Anyway, let's get started because we do have a bunch of things to cover. And now this is something I'm sort of guilty of just kind of glossing over every year because we have so much to talk about. And this year's no exception. We actually have a lot of things to cover, so we're not going to make too big of a deal about it. But the CCFR is turning 9 years old this October 28th.
So you're telling me that a man forgets an anniversary.
Uh-oh. You know what? That wasn't rehearsed either.
No. Happy anniversary to the CCFR. So 9 years since we opened our doors to memberships and donations. And I think I can speak for everybody at the CCFR when I say I'm grateful to everyone that supported us way back in the beginning with those humble beginnings that we came from all the way up to today. So yeah, we've been hit the ground running ever since, and it's full steam ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was doing up the list, I was thinking that maybe in the next episode, because we'll have more time, we'll kind of take a look back. And I know we've done that. I think we did it. Come to think of it, time flies really quickly. So I think it was like 2 years ago we did a kind of a look back, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't even last year, I don't think. But anyway, we'll spend a little bit more time on it in the next episode. But speaking of the CCFR running around like chickens with our heads cut off, our appeal is being heard. Our hearing is being heard in the Federal Court of Appeal on December 9th and 10th.
Correct. So that will be here in the Federal Appeals Court in Ottawa. I will be live tweeting the whole thing. I've got confirmation from Loberg that I can be there. So yeah, very exciting. We've been waiting a long time for this. And I think the decision will come a little more quickly than it did in the regular federal court. So yeah, very exciting.
Yeah. Well, the regular federal court decision took 4 years. So yes, yeah. I think this one comes quicker because it's a far smaller brief and a much narrower legal question or a series of questions. So it shouldn't take as long, but again, that's not something we have control over. I'm hoping that the court will see that we've engaged in a 5-year court battle almost, So we'd really like a resolution of this. So hopefully they have a look at it and make it a priority.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
We shall see.
All right. So the big story in Canada right now, as far as gun owners are concerned, is multiple police agencies and police unions versus the king of public safety, Justin Trudeau.
So this is the most bizarre thing ever. Justin Trudeau took it upon himself on the anniversary of the handgun ban or freeze, whatever you want to call it, to take some weird victory lap, despite the fact that rising, you know, violent crime rates are rising, repeat violent offenders are wreaking havoc in the streets. Police were, this triggered a police backlash like we've never seen. They've come out on social media. They are sick and tired of the Liberals' soft on crime, tough on gun owners policies, and the horrific results of it. So we've got tweets from the Vancouver Police Union, the Surrey Police Union, Toronto Police Association, Steve Ryan, who's a CP crime reporter, but he's a former homicide detective, and even the president of the BC Police Association have all tweeted criticisms. And they're actually even doubling down today on X because they've, you know, they've received a little bit of backlash for speaking up. But yeah, he's been officially ratioed.
So, yeah. Well, I actually have a couple of these tweets here. I will continue to call them tweets, by the way.
But, me too. Yeah. I still call them that.
So that, and the reason why I just want to read a couple is we have a little bit more time here in the podcast, and I think it's important to listen to the messaging. This is not, this is not innuendo or, you know, like trying to cajole the government a little bit or to needle them to take action. Like this is flat out, you know, you're a gaslighter and you're putting our people at risk. So Toronto Police Association says criminals did not get your message. Our communities are experiencing a 45% increase in shootings and a 62% increase in gun-related homicides compared to this time last year. What difference does your handgun ban make when 85% of guns seized by our members can be sourced to the United States? It's around 95%, but that varies, right? That is a variable number. Your statement is out of touch and offensive to victims of crime and police officers everywhere. Whatever you think you've done to improve community safety has not worked at Justin Trudeau. Like,
ooh, I'd like to report a murder.
Yeah. Report a fire. And somebody's, that's a pretty savage burn. CP reporter, Steve Ryan, that you mentioned, his message was the majority of guns used in criminal offenses are smuggled in from the U.S. Gun buybacks and targeting legal gun owners does zero, in all caps, to address the gun crisis. Zero again. Listen to law enforcement and applying common sense can go a long way in fixing this. It's not rocket science. So Vancouver Police Union, Surrey Police Union, it's been pretty savage. And so, you know, we've highlighted police and what they've said, like Evan Bray and Chief Dale McPhee from Edmonton and DemQ from Toronto and others, right? Rob Carver from Winnipeg Police. We've highlighted what police officers were saying on more than a few occasions. And I just want to go out of my way to say, like, I'm not highlighting them because they agree with us. I'm highlighting them because they're telling the actual truth. If the truth didn't line up with gun owners, that's okay. I'd still want them to tell the truth. Because in this post-truth era, that's what we need to fix things. So it's just interesting. Police have had enough of it. And good on them.
Well, and I don't know if you watched Question Period, but our favorite girl, Jennifer McConnell, Liberal public, she's the parliamentary secretary to the Minister of Public Safety. She was going back and forth with Raquel Doncho, who's the conservative critic. And Raquel Doncho read the same tweet that you read. And Jennifer McConnell came back, or O'Connell came back and said, you're just parroting gun lobby talking points. And, you know, people have asked me what I thought of that. And it's like, well, here's the thing. If the police are saying the same thing as the gun lobby, like maybe we're not the gun lobby. Maybe we're the public safety lobby. You know, it's just, I don't know, upside down clown world here in Ottawa, as usual.
Well, it's wild. Yeah. If the police are saying the same thing as the gun lobby, maybe the gun lobby was right.
Maybe. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Anyway, I circulated around that old video with Tlaib Nur Muhammad on it, if you remember that one.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's funny because all of those police officers, I think all the footage other than a press conference for Winnipeg Police and the press conference in Toronto, the other stuff was actually from those committees, the police telling them, like, this won't help public safety at all. This is not what we're asking for. And the Liberals did it anyway because it was about politics.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, let's just play that that old video just for old time's sake. Hang on.
Enforcement are coming before this committee and saying that fewer guns in homes will mean fewer people die.
So what else did they say?
Well, you're welcome to go back and listen to their testimony.
A very strong theme. Most people that are committing crime are with guns, are criminals that don't have the ability to possess them. So it's not law-abiding gun owners committing the majority of these crimes.
Mr. Chair, and as Chief Bray has said, you know, I would certainly agree with the not our law-abiding citizens and the disturbing trends on gang and the data. So
I would not suggest it was effective for gun policy. City of Toronto's experience is the guns are not from law-abiding citizens that are being used in crime. They're guns smuggled from the United States. Those engaged in handling those firearms are not law-abiding licensed gun owners. They are criminals with no firearms license.
The vast majority of gun violence is perpetrated by people who are unlawfully in possession of illegal firearms.
There are handguns all over, they're all illegal, and they're in the hands of criminals. And that the people that legitimately own them, they're in safes and being taken to gun clubs. The two sections don't intersect.
But generally speaking, most of the laws we create are not going to be followed by the people that are committing the crimes with the guns. This issue is not law-abiding Canadians who want to own firearms. The issue really is people that are involved in criminal activity.
So, I mean, unless we all want to disagree with law enforcement, unless we want to say that the cops who are trying to keep our streets safe are wrong.
Yeah, so it's a classic. I think a lot of people remember the exchange that I had with Tlaib Nur Muhammad. That guy, you know, he's lining up actually to lose his riding in the next election, even though it's right downtown Vancouver. So that's good news, at least.
Yeah, that is great news. Yeah, I'm sure he will find something else to do because he was, you know, very privileged before his seat in Parliament. So,
well, yeah, he flipped something like 24 houses or something, some number like that.
Yeah,
he'll go back to house flipping.
Liberal candidate facing questions for flipping over a dozen residential properties in the past decade gave his first TV interview since the story broke today to CTV News. CTV's David Malko joins us live outside Tlaib Nur Muhammad's campaign office in Vancouver, Granville. And David, of course, Justin Trudeau has proposed an anti-flipping tax to curb speculation. What was Nur Muhammad's message to voters who might see his actions as being out of touch?
You know, he's a tech executive. He's run before. He was very confident, very strategic. We'll get to where his confidence wavered a little bit in just a minute here. But I want to back up and kind of remind you where this all started when CTV News found through public records and verified that Nur Muhammad bought or sold at least 30 residential properties, 30 over the last decade. 14 of those, 14 offloaded within 12 months of purchasing, meaning the proposed Trudeau tax there, it would apply. Now, he told me some of them were rentals. Some were fixer-up. First part of a business. So I wanted to know, of those he's sold since 2011, how much he's made. How much have you profited on those 25 in the past decade?
I mean, I'm not, you know, I think it's important to talk about, I'm going to answer that question again, so I'm going to be sure.
Yeah, how much have you profited on those sales?
When you ask, I'm going to give me a second to just make sure I have the right. Okay, so sorry, ask me the question again. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
How much have you profited personally or business-wise on the sales of those 25 properties in the last decade?
While I can't give you an exact number, what I can tell you is that it is by no means the number that has been put forward. But what I can also tell you is that I am absolutely committed to any and all measures that we have put forward that would apply.
I am still waiting for a number outside here, if he has one. Bottom line, he doesn't seem to think or won't say that his past business dealings are part of this unaffordability problem, this crisis, I should say.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Anyway, driving the price of housing up. anyway, let's move on. There's a new bylaw being contemplated in South Stormont, which I guess is on in Ontario, correct?
Correct. So this is a rural Ontario township. They're considering a new noise bylaw. It's funny. People are telling me that it's just a couple of new neighbors that have moved in the area, moved next to the gun range, and of course, are complaining about the sound. I actually originally heard from this from an OPP officer who contacted me. They're very concerned. They've invested considerably into the Cornwall Handgun Club for their training facility. And of course, they would be impacted by this as well, because the Cornwall Handgun Club would not survive the catastrophic suggestions coming out of this bylaw. And the suggestion is they would restrict the discharge of firearms outside of hunting, so for the range, to a variable four-hour window. So it's a different 4 hours each day, but a four-hour window, Sundays and holidays would be prohibited to discharge a firearm at all. So it's unreasonable, it's restrictive. And I've been in contact with the club executive. The CCFR, of course, is committed to helping them in any way we can. There is a hearing coming up in a couple of weeks, which I will be attending. And I will also be submitting some written comments on that. So, you know, I'm happy to support the club and our members in the area. And it's just, it's crazy. I've actually never seen such a restrictive bylaw as this one.
Well, it's
I don't know where they're coming with it.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off. It's designed to destroy the club.
Yes, that's the point of it.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. And this isn't the only range that has experienced this or is experiencing it as we speak, whereas you have a gun club that was established, whatever, decades and decades and decades ago, in some cases, almost 100 years ago. And then people move right next door to it, and then they sue the club or they go after the club using municipal bylaws to try to destroy the club because they don't like the noise.
Well, you know, I think you get these city people. Things changed during the pandemic. A lot of people from Toronto moved into this area because all of a sudden now they could work from home. So you don't have to live in the city and, you know, commute downtown for a job. You can live wherever you want as long as you've got Wi-Fi. The problem is they moved to these areas that, you know, are established. The people who live there enjoy a rural lifestyle, and that, you know, usually includes firearms. And they come along and decide they don't like it. And now they've, you know, stirred up a hornet's nest. The township did some surveys with the local residents, and 65% of the residents completely oppose this, yet they are still going ahead with hearings for it. So, yeah, it's an interesting battle. It's not the first time we've been involved in helping to fight against one of these. We've got a pretty decent record so far, not that we can take full credit, but hopefully a little bit. But yeah, I'm committed to helping the people of that area be able to maintain their lifestyle and just keep doing what they've been doing the whole time before the city people moved in. So yeah, it's messy.
Yeah, it's just wild. I mean, you know, again, I don't want to put too sharp of a point on it, but man, some people are just crappy people.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. I mean,
you're like, oh yeah, what we'll do is we'll move in here. We'll tolerate it for a couple months, and then we'll sue the club and just turn all of these people's lives upside down. Just, you know, or we're going to go there and we're going to push the municipal government to basically eliminate the club. And, you know, we're going to win anyway. And we don't care about all these people that haven't done anything wrong. Like, just it's an interesting thing. Now, I think it's also important to mention that there's a role that people in the area can play. And that is stay close to the CCFR. You know, Tracy and I will come out with some kind of announcement, might be in the newsletter. So make sure you're subscribed in the newsletter or you're following us on social media when that meeting is, because we need a show of the community. We need everyone in the community that's a gun owner to show up at these meetings and make sure that they tell, you know, city council, you know, the municipal government, hey, nobody wants this other than a handful of narcissists, and this won't stand. So
absolutely. That's key, is to overwhelm these meetings and overwhelm the response to it and make sure you stand up for yourself. Because if you are silent, that's looked at as support, right?
Yeah, absolutely, right? They're like, oh, okay, well, obviously nobody's upset. So yeah, might as well pass it because we're getting pressure from this small group of people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we have had some success stories in doing this. So, you know,
Yeah, I mean, it is an all hands on deck. People from all over the community and hunting organizations and everybody kind of gets together to fight these things. And we just have to keep doing that. So,
yeah, absolutely. We absolutely have to keep going and not being intimidated by any of these processes. So, all right. Let's move on to our last topic, which is a new bar has been established in Canada as far as ladies' range days.
A new bar has been established. So this is like breaking news. You'll remember I shared the story about Lower Trent Valley Ladies' Range Day here in Ontario a couple months back. And I said it was the largest in the country. Well, I've received some new information out of Barrie. So this comes out of the Barrie Gun Club here in Ontario as well. Back in June, they held their annual Ladies Charity Range Day with a whopping, get this, 240 girls. So 240 girls hit the range. Not only did they bust all the records for attendance, they also raised $15,000 for a children's charity. So that is the number to beat. Not that that's a competition, but everything in life is a competition. But yeah, 240 ladies showed up to their Ladies Range Day. And I want to send a whole bunch of love out to Karen Perseus and the whole crew at Barrie Gun Club. You guys are killing it. So congratulations.
Yeah, that's remarkable. Sorry, Lower Trent Valley Club. You had the glory there for a few weeks. But yeah, there was a bigger one. Now that's the new number to beat. So
yes,
you can always feel free to reach out to the CCFR. We'd be happy to help get an even bigger Ladies' Day going and try to beat the record.
Absolutely.
All right. So that's everything we had to talk about.
All right.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thanks for the update, and we'll see you in the next one.
We'll see you then.
All right. That's going to do it for episode 176 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Make sure you share the podcast. If you have shared it, thanks so much for the help. We really appreciate it. We want to get everyone we possibly can involved in fighting for their own ability to legally own and use firearms. And hey, apparently the ability to legally own and use firearms is now endorsed by various police organizations across the country. And when people threaten it for no good reason, the police are actually standing up for us. Isn't that awesome? What could Canada be like if we all understood the difference between right and wrong and we all stood up for each other to make sure that people didn't do stupid things? Wow, what a place it would almost feel like 1990s, 1980s, 90s, and the early 2000s in Canada. That's what it would almost feel like. But anyway, I guess dare to dream, right? I can dream, can't I? All right, the last couple of things I wanted to just run past you or remind you of just before I let you go is number one, you can go to ccfr.ca right now and enter the Willie the Kid contest. You guys know all about that. That contest closes November the 20th. So if you donate $10 to the CCFR, which is a great cause we'd like to think, you'll get one free entry into the contest. If you donate $25, you'll get three free entries into the contest to win a really cool and very unique prize package of a shotgun and a commemorative frame commemorating Willie the Kid Williams, Canada's number two fighter pilot of World War II. Pretty cool, very unique. And again, thanks so much to Gord Johnson and the rest of his family for donating that stuff. It was really, really great. Very meaningful. If you are a French speaker and you're looking for a podcast to listen to, a firearm-related podcast, you can always check out Au Pas de Tir, which is the sort of, I guess you could say, the unofficial CCFR radio podcast hosted by three CCFR field officers. So give them a listen. They give away some prizes. I think they're giving away some CCFR promo codes, right? We're all big fans of promo codes, if you catch my drift. And you can always check that out. You can find them on YouTube just by searching the name Au Pas de Tir. And last but not least, as I mentioned in the intro, I put up a Civil Advantage video for fun, just for old time's sake. If you haven't heard that I did that, then and you're interested, then go ahead and search for Civil Advantage on YouTube. You'll find the three new videos that I stuck up there. There might be a couple more coming. It's not really something that I want to keep doing because I'm extremely busy. But in the winter time, I have a little bit more time than I have in the summer. And you never know. I do have plans to do a couple more of those videos. So if you enjoy them, that's awesome. And if you used to be a subscriber to the channel or whatever, it might remind you of a simpler time long ago when there wasn't as many firearm restrictions. Canada was a safer place. and we were left alone and treated like we were good citizens, right? So anyway, little blast from the past. Okay, that's it. That's all I've got for you. Thanks so much, everyone, for watching. Take care, and we will see you next time.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.